I know she's retired and just had a baby, and that's all fine and dandy, but man, it would be a dream come true if she came back and I could fight her one more time. But don't get me twisted, I'm not trying to call out a brand new mama. This has to be something she wants too. And with that, welcome to Always Stoppage, the show with the news of the day. You usually give it just some time, sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you. And get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Frank, and I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John Franklin, I'm well. If you see that, I'm looking like Bobby Valentine in the early 2000s. I'm just trying to play a character here. Listen, I'm excited about the holidays. I mean, what can I say? I've got the Bing Crosby Merry Christmas behind me. I've got Kenny and Dolly back there. I've got the Raptors Christmas uni going. I'm having a lot of fun. Listen, I took the week off. I grew with the facial hair, so it's goatee season. Now, John, I made a rookie mistake before coming on the show because I wasn't goatee Craig Allen, which never happens. Listen, if you're a fan of Fight Night Picks, you only get to see this on Early Stoppage, but I shaved the middle. Is that a goatee faux pas, or is that something you go with?
I think it all depends. It all depends on what makes you feel most comfortable. Some people would say that the middle, which we call in the States a soul patch, when it is done independently of all other facial hair, it's a part of the goatee. It's not a part of the goatee. It depends.
Here's what I can't stand.
I'm going to tell you where I draw the line. There's a lot of people that do this. Drives me nuts. Baseball players do this. This and none of this. Drives me. It is the number one most egregious facial hair foul that exists.
There is some up there, just for the people wondering at home. There is some up there. Connects now. I figured why not. But Reed Johnson, you want an all-time soul patch guy? Toronto Blue Jay, Reed Johnson. You want an all-time, just chin scruff? Didn't Kyle Schwarber do that for a while?
He did.
All right, we'll move on from the baseball talk, the basketball talk, the Christmas talk, and get into some MMA. I'm excited.
On this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Bones' address, Funky's plans, and Frank Mir's bank account. We begin, Craig, with Connor and Chael. Craig, we got the Chael reference out of the way early this week. As the bad guy and the Notorious seemed to be feuding, Chael called Connor a rich weirdo, to which Connor replied, calling Chael a poor weirdo. Chael then made a video saying, in so many words, I've been your biggest fan, and you don't want me as an enemy. So, Craig, I have two questions. One, is this feud on the level? And I don't want to start with the pro wrestling talk this early, but is it a shoot or is it a work? And two, who wins this one in the court of public opinion?
Dear Slim, I wrote you, but you still ain't calling. I left my cell, my pager, and my home phone at the bottom. John, it's really weird. And the weirdest part is who wins? Because the person that wins out of this exchange is usually the less famous person. If we're going in terms of who's the most famous, highest paid superstar athlete, Chael Sonnen. And then Michael Bisping somewhere there because he's got his own YouTube channel, kind of doing a Chael thing. I like it. You know what? Production values, Bisping's got it. It's better than mine. It's better than yours. It's better than Chael's. Bisping, look out for him. He's got like 225,000 subscribers, so he's doing something right. But to really answer this one, Chael wins out of this one. You know, it puts eyes on him in terms of what he's doing with Bellator. It puts eyes on him in terms of what he's doing with his YouTube channel. And for Connor, it is really weird. I mean, to answer it, few to this level, who wins? Chael wins. In the court of public opinion, Chael still wins. I don't see how Conor McGregor wins an exchange like this. If he was going back and forth with Habib, if he was going back and forth with even Khamzat Chimaev right now, like I'm starting to grasp at straws here. I don't think Conor McGregor wins an argument against Chael Sonnen in any sense, no matter what he says on the internet.
So, and I'm going to bring this around, so just get prepared. But I'm watching something on Hulu right now called The Curse of Von Dutch. And it's a pretty good documentary. Basically, it talks about how Von Dutch came about, how it went, why it went away so quickly. Conor McGregor is kind of like Ronda Rousey, and Ronda Rousey's like kind of like Von Dutch, where it was like super popular. Everybody was sort of clout chasing and tagging Ronda and Conor stuff to make themselves seem more relevant, taking pictures. That's what they were. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't cool to be a Ronda fan anymore. All of a sudden, it wasn't cool to wear a Von Dutch trucker hat anymore. I think that Chael has stood the test of time. So even though Chael kind of at one point or another, you know, was hated by fans, and I will admit, when Chael was in his prime, I didn't get it. I wasn't necessarily a Chael fan. I'm a huge Chael fan now, but like when he fought Anderson both times, I rooted for Anderson. When he fought, you know, I mean, I was never a Chael guy until I understood what he was doing. But even in the moment, even if I did understand what he was doing then, and I was what they call in the wrestling business a smart mark, even if I knew it, I still wouldn't have enjoyed it. It wasn't my cup of tea. So either way, I probably still wouldn't have been a fan. But again, Chael has stood the test of time. I don't know that Connor will. Connor is able to sort of swerve these things only because he has a fight pending, right? And I think that once he no longer has fights to promote, and the whole aura of the fight that he's got coming up, some of this stuff may fall a little flat.
My co-host, Ariel Helwani, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the pro wrestling talk, John Franklin. And listen, when we kind of bring it full circle, we talk about somebody who was the hotness at one point and is now kind of faded, but tried to bring it back, John. Listen, the Bloody Elbow headline from friend of the show, Kristen King, reads as such. Misha Tate suffers multiple nose fractures and lost to Vieira, faces lengthy UFC medical suspension. So we're talking about Misha Tate here. She was the champion of the world. It went away fairly quickly. She went away for a long time. Now she's back. Now she's gone for about 6 months after her big shot at a possible title shot really blew up in her face against Ketlin Vieira last weekend. Possibly she's going to be away for 6 months. As I mentioned, she has to get clearance from an ear, nose, and throat doctor. So, John, what's the play for Cupcake now? Because it seemed like title shot or bust from the start of the show last weekend. Now, where are we going?
Well, okay. So that's the question. Is the question that you're only in this if you can have a clean run to the belt? And if you can't have a clean run to the belt, it's, you know, back to the vice president of one. Or, listen, I can tell you one thing. Misha Tate damn sure didn't sign up for multiple nose fractures. She thought, I might win some, I might lose some, I might get a title shot, I might not. But I don't think she was expecting to get busted up like that. But here we are. So the question is now, is the risk worth the reward? Now you're not just putting in jeopardy your legacy. You're putting in jeopardy your health. I think the play for Cupcake is an interesting one. I think it would all depend on how much you think the UFC would pay Ronda Rousey to fight Misha Tate again. And if the UFC would give Ronda Rousey upwards of, if they would make it worth Ronda's, you know, time and energy, which again, in the quote to begin the show, Ronda's a new mom. There's a lot of things that have to happen. But if you're Ronda and you want to sell a documentary to Netflix about a comeback, if you want to make a lot of money from the UFC, if you want to sort of – there's a way to market this where you make more money in coming back and fighting Misha Tate than you would in the WWE or anywhere else. There's a way that you can really monetize this situation if you're Ronda Rousey. But the question becomes, do you – is it worth it for you to fight in UFC? If there's a chance that you lose to Misha Tate, can you swallow that? So the play for Cupcake is to fight Ronda. I just don't know if it's the play for Ronda.
So UFC 268 did what? 700,000 pay-per-view buys? It was a respectable card. I enjoyed it. Right? I liked it.
I liked it.
Does a Ronda Rousey Misha Tate card sell 500,000 as a co-main? Like, are we even kind of getting close to that?
I think with the right dance partner, Ronda and Misha breaks a million.
Really?
I think that if Ronda Rousey and Misha Tate had co-main evented UFC 268, it would have broke a million.
Yeah, I heavily disagree. And the reason why is I have the numbers.
Without Ronda Rousey.
I have the numbers on my end of what Misha Tate, Ketlin Vieira did. I know the sentiment of the fans for Misha Tate, Ketlin Vieira, and that was a bantamweight title eliminator, so to speak. I think the way Ketlin performed, yeah, it was good. It was technical. She was on her back foot, and she just kind of pawed a jab out there, threw a nice right hand. You get a fight against Jermaine Durandamy for doing that as a co-main of another fight night. Like, I didn't learn enough out of Ketlin, and I certainly didn't get enough out of Misha. And now with a performance like that, breaking your nose, you're out for 6 months. my level of excitement here, I might look like a guy that's in need of a neck tattoo with this look that I'm sporting right now. I'm more excited about getting a neck tattoo than I am about watching Misha Tate and Ronda Rousey.
And we move on. Craig, ever since we've been doing this show in a serious way, I have been low-key trying to get you to come to Arizona. I have touted the weather. I've mentioned our proximity to Las Vegas, Los Angeles, and Mexico. The fact that we have all four major sports teams. Suns are on a 13-game winning streak, by the way. And we host Super Bowls. We'll be hosting one in 2023. But alas, have not yet found the carrot to get you and your wife out to Arizona. Well, Craig, I may well have the carrot now. The greatest fighter of all time is considering a move to Arizona. John Jones, who was training over at Henry Cejudo's place, 20 minutes from my house, fight ready, says he liked Arizona real estate market more than New Mexico's. And who knows, Craig? The other thing to keep in mind is Jones's brother, Pro Bowl defensive end Chandler Jones, plays for the Cardinals. So, Craig, I won't force you to comment on if Jones coming here would change your plans, but I will ask if you think a move to Arizona will help his career.
He's making a move. He's going to have to measure his move. John, I've spent all week putting in laminate flooring. That's been my week. I've been on vacation, but to answer it, yeah, I think why not? I mean, we've had a lot of different fighters make the move. Actually going to fight ready, which I already kind of mentioned, but has it worked out for some of them? Well, let's see. I mean, Zhang Weili, no. Henry Cejudo, but he doesn't really fight anymore. All right. Hallo about, geez, it's hard to come up with a lot of fighters that have won recently.
Hallo Costa's fought out of there. Davison Figueiredo's out of there.
Korean Zombie? He won his last fight. He beat Dan Ige. No, I really do respect Fight Ready. I think that they're a great gym. And if John Jones wanted to go there or where else? The Lab, maybe? But that probably wouldn't make a lot of sense. I have a hard time seeing your gyms, and I'll say your gyms in Phoenix area. How many big fighters do you have there, though? Like, how many big-time heavyweights, big-name heavyweights train out of Arizona right now? I mean, Ryan Bader trains there. Who else? Who's his buddy there? Young fella.
Oh, the kid that was just on the Bellator card. Sullivan, right?
Yeah, that's it. Like, there's is it Sullivan Colley? Is that who it is?
Sullivan
there's
Colley.
Very few big fighters that train out of Arizona right now. And pardon my ignorance, I'm sure there's some that I'm missing. I could only think of two and their teammates. But for Jones, yes, you're going to gain different parts and parcels to your game, especially going from a gym that you've been at forever and making a move like that. I'm sure there's going to be new wrinkles he can add in. I mean, look at what Ngannou did going from MMA Factory, working a long time at Extreme Couture. But you can see what I'm saying here. Going to different gyms, definitely a good thing. I think it would help his career. Ultimately, you just have to get the right training partners. And John Jones can fly people in like that.
He can, and I think it's maybe easier to fly people into Phoenix than it is to fly people into Albuquerque. I think that here's the thing with the Lab and Fight Ready. If you leave Jackson Wink, you're going to Jackson Wink, Jackson Acoma, whatever the hell we were talking about last time. If you leave Fight Ready, you got the Lab. You got Ryan Bader you could train with. And listen, this is a stretch, but let me just tell you this. Yes, there are not a lot of big-name heavyweights that we know of, but there's a lot of big boys here considering there's a lot of pro sports here. And athletes, this is a place that athletes saw. A guy came and helped out with practice the other day with my son's team, and he used to play for the Yankees. He's an old guy. I didn't know him. You probably wouldn't know him. His name was Ken Johnson, played for the Yankees 100 years ago. He said the most retired MLB players live in this area. Now, so if the most retired MLB players live in this area, stands to reason maybe there's some NFL players here, maybe there's some basketball players here. I mean, there's athletes in the area is my point. So if you just need bodies, there's athletes, right? You can get guys here. So I'm not saying that's the answer, but it's like you said, instead of – listen. Not for nothing. If you're John Jones, maybe you come here and open your own gym. I mean, there's certainly an abundance of fighters here, more so than in Albuquerque, would be my point.
Was it a Ken Johnson that only played in the minors? Was he like 72?
He was 72. He played. He had a cup of coffee in the bigs.
Not Ken Johnson. The other Ken Johnsons that play in the majors are dead right now, so you might have seen a ghost.
Maybe.
Maybe you did. All right, John, you know what? Let's move it forward. And this is one that really threw a wrench into our script before the show. Were you an Attitude Era guy or a WCW Monday Nitro guy?
I was a, at the time, I was Nitro.
Really? Oh, you're a hipster. Okay, that's fine. Regardless of professional wrestling, MMA star Hamzat Chimaev moved to 24-0 in freestyle wrestling with an 8-0 score over UFC middleweight Jack Hermanson last weekend. Listen, he looked yoked. MMA Twitter exploded with excitement over non-Ben Askren or Jordan Burroughs wrestling match. And so here we are, and we're talking about it. So I ask you, John, with the spotlight on Hamzat again, does this deter possible UFC welterweights away from a fight with Hamzat, or does it add more intrigue?
Listen, he was already the boogeyman. So, I mean, I don't know how much more. I don't know if you would be more deterred by him dominating Hermanson in a wrestling match or him just beating the shit everybody that he fights in a cage. I don't know which would deter you more. Either way, I don't see anybody rushing to fight this guy. Pardon the Russian. I just don't see it. I mean, he's a guy, and we'll talk about Sean O'Malley later, but he is just on the bullet train from debut, seems like the title shot, because he just keeps fighting so well. And it seems like it took Khabib a minute to get where he needed to get to. This kid could start calling out champions tomorrow if he wanted to, and he kind of has. I think that, yeah, I don't know that it doesn't make anybody want to fight him more. But I don't know if it makes anybody want to fight him less.
I think it makes like Leon Edwards kind of think twice about maybe taking a fight against him again. Like that's the one guy where I looked at it and I went, yeah, Leon's a pretty good, like, remember when he fought Gunnar Nelson? He surprised me in that fight. And that was a while ago. But for Leon, I'm shaking on my shorts. Now, Gilbert Burns is the only guy that seems to be like calling his name out. Like, you don't hear Vicente Luque going, hey, I missed weight. I want to fight Hamzat now. It's only Gilbert Burns. So make that fight. And listen, if Gilbert wins, another rematch for Kamaru Usman. He gets to pad his record. Daniel Cormier gets to go on the broadcast on a fight night card that nobody's paying attention to and go, oh, Kamaru Usman, he's the greatest welterweight of all time. Daniel, what are you talking about? Stop. Dana White, you know, said something before. Like, hey, you got to pepper in the fact that Kamaru's the best.
Dana says it.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Give me a break. The book's here somewhere. I don't know where it is. But George St. Pierre, it's actually on the floor. Ooh, should probably clean that up. But yeah, when I look at it, I think for Leon, a little bit more of a deterrent. But Gilbert Burns seems to really want that fight. And I'm all about it. I'm excited for that if it does actually happen.
Who? Here's the problem most fighters go with, which is that, you know, it's a risk-reward situation. And the upside... Does it seem like, I mean, I guess if you're the first guy to beat Chimaev and you're convincing in doing so, but if you're Burns, there's obviously a much easier path to getting back to Kamaru Usman than going through Chimaev. So I don't know. Yeah, it gets interesting. All right, Craig, let's talk Kayla Harrison and Chris Cyborg. Kayla has been calling Cyborg's name for some time now, and Cyborg thinks she knows why. Cyborg said, quote, I believe it like this. Kayla's just doing like Ronda did in the beginning. I was the champion in Strikeforce, and everybody started talking about me because people didn't know who she is at the time. I think she just followed the things like Ronda did in the beginning. She's just doing the beginning too. In response, Harrison did admit that she wanted the fight and thinks she needs it to legitimize her career. Now, Ronda and Cyborg never fought. Ronda, in my opinion, just used Cyborg for the clout. Do you think that's what Harrison's doing here, or do you think she really wants to fight?
For her part, Harrison doesn't buy that White would actually dump the entire weight class because Nunes decided she was going to stay at bantamweight moving forward. I don't think he'd get rid of featherweight, Harrison said when speaking to MMA Fighting, so on and so forth. And then she talks about the fact, and this is the headline, Kayla Harrison says it's her job to prove to Dana White that I'm worth the investment if she wants to fight in the UFC. Well, John Franklin, I added something to The Office that nobody's seen and they probably can't see it. Look at that dark corner. You can't see it. Point is, in that dark corner, there's a boogeyman known as No Time Volkan Oezdemir Anthony Smith. That post here, another office, so on and so forth. But John Franklin, I added a new bit of merchandise to the corner. Our friend Drake Riggs was at the fights then. He didn't get it for me. I got a 2021 PFL Championships poster. There is a smidge, a Kayla Harrison smidge on that poster. There's also a Julia Budd one. I don't know how she got her hands on a pen or a marker to sign that poster. Very strange. The reason I'm saying this, John, Kayla Harrison is the biggest picture on that poster. The biggest picture on that poster. She definitely was able to surpass expectations with the PFL. I think she's booked her shot with the UFC. Now, to answer your question, would I like to see the fight against Cyborg? Sure. Why not? Great stuff. But I kind of like dominant champions, and I'd be kind of cool with Kayla Harrison going to the UFC and just dusting everybody at featherweight and not even worrying about a Cyborg fight. I think, yes, a win over Cyborg, it builds legacy. What does Chris Cyborg have over everybody right now, John? She has a grand slam of titles, the four different ones, Invicta, UFC, Strikeforce, Bellator, and that's cool. Kayla Harrison, you beat Cyborg, you somehow capture all four, you know? But for me, I'd be fine with her just going to the UFC and continuing to dominate.
It gets tricky because it depends on how much you think that that Cyborg has left in the tank, and how much Bellator thinks Cyborg has left in the tank. Because if you're Harrison, the ideal situation is two or three fight contract with Bellator. You come in, you run through somebody, then you fight Cyborg, then you fight again. Because they're either going to want the rematch, or they're going to want, you know, you could cash a big check with Bellator if you're Harrison. The problem becomes, you know, making Cyborg a foregone conclusion is never good for anything. I mean, she's going to be one of those people that, until the day she, as long as she's willing to step in a cage, she's dangerous. In the same way Fedor is always dangerous and Anderson's always dangerous and whatever. So I just can't figure out if she's, I think that if she goes to the UFC, they would put her in a holding pattern. So I don't know that they would book her immediately with Amanda, because they wouldn't want it to look like Amanda. I think the UFC likes Amanda's legacy. So if I were advising Kayla Harrison, I would say go to Bellator, sign a huge contract, bust Cyborg's ass a couple times, and then make your way to the UFC. I have a quick question for you before you say what you're about to say. Who do you think she has a better chance of beating, Cyborg or Amanda?
Cyborg.
Well, there you go.
On the ground, and which is tricky because Jermaine Duranemi tried to wrestle him in Nunes, but whatever. My question is, I mean, you look at the way that it's going, is it a foregone conclusion that she just doesn't go back to the PFL?
No, she even said herself she might go back. I think that she's keeping all her options open. She doesn't want to disrespect the PFL. She just made a lot of money through there, so it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like saying, if you get separated and you're married, you don't want to start talking about what you're going to do when you get divorced. You know, they're kind of separated right now. They haven't quite figured out what they're going to do next. So it's a little bit disrespectful of them to say, I did all this great work with PFL, but screw them. I'm on to bigger and better things. And like she really hasn't gotten an offer from the UFC or Bellator either. So she's probably keeping it as like her quote, safety school or something. You know, I really want to go to this school, but just in case I got the PFL.
It's like me going with a goatee and then talking about neck tattoos. My wife hears it. Who knows? Who knows? John? Who knows? Marty from Nebraska. He's a combined 4-0 against Colby Covington and Jorge Masvidal. And with the rumors of a Covington-Masvidal BMF season of The Ultimate Fighter keeps heating up, with Colby Covington joining Submission Radio this past week and saying that he'll be backed into a corner and he'll need to take this fight. It makes sense on The Ultimate Fighter. Let's revive the show. That show has been so boring, stale. There's no entertainment value on that show anymore. So let's bring it back, man. John, if we have a Covington Masvidal Ultimate Fighter, would it break the internet like Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian holding hands in Yeezys?
In Yeezys? That's mad. I didn't get
she
that.
She did. She
oh,
did.
Oh, that's filthy. But in fairness, Kim Kardashian did some content, or some content was repurposed that she's a part owner of Yeezy. So, you know, this is what I'm talking about, disrespecting the ex. I would say this. These Ultimate Fighter things get weird because sometimes it's better to put together two guys who just have crazy personalities and you know ultimately will collide, like Rashad and Rampage, like Bisbing and Mayhem Miller, that don't already have something baked in, right? Like Jones and Sonnen, they don't already have a beat.
Like Ortega and Volkanovski.
But here's the thing. Here's where it gets weird if you put guys already that have a beef together on The Ultimate Fighter, is you realize that they're going to be there for whatever it is, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, and they're just not going to fucking argue with each other every day, every minute, every... So you almost diminish the feud in a way, because if they were just going to fight, you could have embedded, you could have the prime times, you could have all that stuff, the countdown shows, that shows... Every single time these two interact, it's almost coming to blows. And it builds and it builds and it builds, and then the payoff is the fight. You have all these sort of like calm moments sometimes in The Ultimate Fighter, even with like when was it Dillashaw and Garbrandt on there together? Even with those two, it was kind of like they had to have some moments where they weren't, you know, you're there so long. That at some point you have to have some peace. And I think that diminishes from the rivalry.
Who watches this show? Like, I know they're going to have another season. Who the hell's watching this? Like, listen, don't get me wrong. I like the fighters that came out of the last season. Brian Battle's a good story. Trayshawn Gore. They're going to fight each other. That was supposed to be the finale. At 135? I mean, Ricky Tercios, where's he been? He's a superstar, right? I like the fighters. But Volkanovski, Ortega as coaches, good trash talk, guys. Way to go.
I got a question for you. And because this is to me the comparison between the Contender Series and the Ultimate Fighter. All right, I have in my house, I have a toaster oven and I have a microwave. So I'm going to ask you a question that shouldn't be a difficult question to answer, but why would you use a microwave over a toaster oven? What is the advantage to using a microwave?
Microwave's quicker.
So if you're going to have something that takes more time, it should at least be better. So if I put something in the toaster oven versus a microwave, the reason it goes in the toaster oven is when it's done, it tastes better. So if I'm going to take the time to use the toaster oven, it should at least taste better. So if I'm going to take the time to follow these fighters all the way through The Ultimate Fighter, at the end, I should at least get better fighters, a better story, something. But we have not yet seen where guys coming out of The Ultimate Fighter are more compelling than guys coming out of the Contender Series. So what is the point of investing all the time in The Ultimate Fighter if you can get the same result from the Contender Series in less time?
Yeah, that's it. Like, you look at the finals of the lower weight class that they had recently. Brady Hystan, young guy, didn't face a good level of competition outside of the UFC. Fought good fighters on the show. I mean, he was halfway interesting by the end of it, but Ricky Tercios stole everything. Like, he had everything going for him, like peace and love, and I'm fighting for the kids and whatever he had to say. It was all crazy and ridiculous. You probably could have got that out of Contender Series too. Like, if you just interviewed him before the show, during the show, after the show, it's all the same thing, and it's all going to stick in everybody's minds the same way. I'm not a Contender Series guy, I am a Contender Series guy. I'm not an Ultimate Fighter guy until I have to be, until the finals, and then I go back and watch all the fights. So for me, we're just kind of feeding a fed horse, as I like to say, you know, the old PETA guidelines. But yeah, I really have to get an Ultimate Fighter fan's perspective on that one.
All right, Craig, we move on. Let's go to sparring sessions. I got a couple loaded up here. I feel like we talked about both of them, but I want to revisit them now because they're still in the news. Holloway. You know, the Conor stuff's coming out. Let's talk real quick about this. When Conor did the thing where he was pacing in front of the TV, everybody thought that was lame. I didn't hate it.
What do you mean?
I didn't think it was the lamest thing I ever saw.
Okay, I mean, time out. When I was a little kid, and I remember this clear as day, hockey night in Canada, Saturday night, you get the early game, you get the nightcap, the West Coast game. Early game, let's say it's Montreal, Boston, it's Montreal, Toronto, whatever. I'm a little kid. I'm 4 or 5 years old. You run into your bedroom, you grab your pillows, you put them over your legs, and you're pretending to be the goalie, and you're making saves as the play is going on. When I was five, I was doing this stuff, John, in front of a television. And I'm walking around trying to act like I'm one of the players on the ice. What's Conor McGregor doing the same thing for in the dark at his house with his shirt off?
You know what? I'll tell you this. I think that he misjudged it a little bit. I don't hate him doing it. Because to me, it's no different than putting a fighter's picture up and throwing a dart at it, which is kind of nowadays.
Who does that?
Well, guys will tape a fighter's face on a heavy bag.
Who?
No, listen, it's been done. I think the play that Conor should have done was he could do what he did, but he should have made the thing that he was looking at so extravagant that the side story becomes that Conor McGregor has a 150-inch TV in his house or some shit like that. Like it's like this huge TV. And he's standing in front of that, so at least he gets the I'm rich clout to go with it. And it doesn't just seem like a guy who's staring at like a hotel room level. You're like, this guy's worth $1 billion damn near, or whatever he's worth, $500 million or whatever. And he's looking at this little ass TV in a dark ass room. He should have had the biggest entertainment center you've ever seen with his belts underneath. And in Holloway, you know, that it's one of those things that kind of maybe would be even more impressive as a picture. That should have been the social media. I just think – now, listen, we're getting off track. The point is that, you know, there's talk about Volk 3. There's talk about Conor 2. Holloway looked impressive against Yair Rodriguez, as he always does. Did I say Holloway or Conor?
You got it.
Holloway looked impressive. What do you think's next for this kid? Secondary option for sparring sessions. What do you think's next for Carlos Esparza? They're talking Joanna, they're talking title shot.
Joanna rematch, do it. Volkanovski 3, do it. The Conor fight's not going to happen. Conor's still out, he's away, his leg still recovering, he still has televisions to walk in front of and impress people on the internet, like yourself, or like the diehards on the Twitter, or the Reddit, or wherever. But for Carlos Esparza, yeah, you're not going to get that title shot. Dana White's already been clear as mud about that one. So, yeah, I think she has to fight Joanna.
Okay, so sparring sessions seem a little uneventful, so I got one more for you. Jordan Burroughs says he wants a one-and-done fight in MMA, and if he never did it, he would feel like it's a career unrealized. It would always be something that he wished he had done. What's the motion, and who's the guy?
LFA, somebody you've never heard of before.
Not even Bellator, not even PFL.
No. I mean, look, Alex Pereira. How exciting was he when he knocked out Andreas Mihailidis? He's one of Joe Rogan's favorite fighters. Where did he have to fight first? LFA.
Yeah, I think it gets weird for Burroughs because, you know, we talk about this all the time, which is your name versus your game. And when you have a bigger name than you have game. Now, listen, he's a world-class Olympian wrestler, so we don't really know what the game is. We know the name's big. So, like, if you're being booked based on your name, it's the UFC and it's the main card. If you're being booked based on your game, it's the Bellator prelims or it's PFL or whatever.
Yeah, but I mean, look, and I'll look this up because it's my fault, but I didn't know there was going to be a third layer. I'm going to Google this.
Are you looking for his weight class?
Video. Bo Nickel improves to 2-0 with devastating one-punch knockout at Islands Fight 70. So, I mean, listen, Bo Nickel, he's as impressive as a wrestler in terms of popularity on the internet recently as a Jordan Burroughs. He's in that same stratosphere of recognizability on the internet, I should say. He's fighting with Island Fights, the same promotion that's booked. Didn't their promoter have a fight with them? Yeah. And Chase Sherman guest stars there sometimes when he's not in the UFC. Island Fights, they are actually pretty good fights.
I disagree. I think Jordan Burroughs is a bigger star than Bo Nickel. But we can argue that another day. Craig, we move on. Let's talk about, let's go with the featured segment. Another 5-4-3-2-1. I got a couple of for you. I don't know what the, I didn't have a one. We'll figure out the one together. Something will come to me. All right, let's start with five. Five guys you have bet the house are going to be champions in 5 years. They can be current champions.
Yeah. At heavyweight, Francis Ngannou is still going to be a champion. at bantamweight in Bellator, Sergio Pettis is still going to be a champion. Yaroslav Amosov is still going to be a champion with Bellator. So there's three. Let's go Brandon Moreno, four, even though flyweight's loaded. And you want five? We're going to go with a totally different one. Ian Gary is going to get that opportunity in the UFC. He's going to be a champion. I think Usman retires. Ian Gary's time's now.
We move on to four. Listen, I want to be very specific with the way I'm asking this question. When you answer it, you can say the weight class and the promotion, okay? Or you can just say they're all in the UFC. Four most important divisions in MMA.
Light heavyweight and Bellator. See what I did there. Bantamweight in the UFC. Featherweight in the UFC. Welterweight in the UFC.
Three most important gyms in MMA.
American Top Team, Sanford MMA. Nova Uniao.
All right. You have to get into a fight tomorrow. Two guys you want in your corner.
Can I tag them in or?
No, they're just advising you. It doesn't have to be fighters.
Jason Perillo and Fabrizio Verdum.
That's not bad. One question you would ask Dana White if you had to be honest.
Why do you have that painting of the guy and the girlfriend in your office? Because it made me uncomfortable listening to you explain it.
And we move on, Craig, to For the Gram. Let's hit the socials. Craig, this week things got interesting between Ben Askren and Nate Diaz when Askren said that he would want to be the last fight of Nate's UFC contract. On Twitter, Nate seems largely uninterested. But yeah, Jake Paul, all kinds of people got involved in this. Which leads me to the question, why the hell would Nate Diaz be interested in a fight with Ben Askren, Craig?
Because he watched the highlights of Masvidal knocking him out and Damian Maya beating him in Singapore. I don't know. I mean, it seems like, hey, if Jake Paul won, and that was a big kind of way to springboard him into popularity, maybe Nate could do it too. I really don't know why Nate Diaz would want to fight Ben Askren at anything. It's not like the UFC is never going to bring him back, so why would they even talk about it?
There's no upside for Nate. There's no upside. You end up losing to the guy that lost to Jake Paul, potentially. And Askren's correct in this respect. He said, in a MMA fight, I think he said something like he's still great or he still dominates or whatever. I don't know if I agree with that. But he's certainly a better MMA fighter than he is a boxer. So if Nate was going to fight Ben Askren at all, it would be in boxing. So, you know, there's no upside. All right, let's talk till Strickland. Craig, I can't make heads or tails of this Sean Strickland. He seems like a jobber who's trying to make big boy moves. Is he legit or is he trying to talk himself into opportunities he doesn't deserve?
He looked pretty good against Uriah Hall, right? And then he went on Helwani's show in the MMA Hour and he kind of said some things that get you in big time trouble. Some things that usually get said when the cameras are off. Right. Some things that, yeah. You just don't say. And so there was that buzz, and then it went away, and then it's come back again. I really don't know what to make of, I'd say poor old Sean Strickland, but the guy's kind of put himself in a pretzel, and this is where he finds himself. And for Darren Till, same thing can be said. I mean, Strickland's performances have been on an uptick. We can both agree on that, right? At 185, he's looked as legit as he did at 170 until he fought Elize Uzaleski dos Santos. He's looked amazing since he's come back after that bad motorcycle accident. His kneecap went all to shit. And all of a sudden, he's back. His boxing's great. His forward pressure. He's kind of square, but nobody can figure him out. For Till, huge downswing right now, right? Like, this is a guy, UFC 227, Tyron Woodley, flying high, future champ. And then he didn't win that fight. Masvidal knocks him out. It's been misstep after misstep for Darren Till for the last, 3 years? Yeah. So for Till, he said he was open to, and it seemed like maybe he'd end up training with Khamzat Chimaev. I think that's good for him. But to answer the question, I think Strickland's legit, but I think his mouth is writing checks that are weird. They're just weird. They might get bounced. They might not. I don't know. They've just been weird.
Till's this guy, man, who's really in a unique position because he still has value to the UFC because he has a name. But guys like Strickland, I mean, if these two guys fought, who's the betting favorite? Got to be Strickland, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Craig, we move on to posting to the book. Frank Mir will get his highest paycheck of his career in Triller Triad. Should that concern us?
No, it shouldn't. And I mean, if you think about it, Frank Mir had a competitive fight in that boxing fight that he had with Triller, right? Like, it was halfway competitive. So good for him. He's fighting Kubrat Pulev, who's fought who? Anthony Joshua, lost that fight. He fought a Klitschko, lost that fight. Have you looked at this card?
I haven't.
Do you know? Time out. So I will say this. It's from the Globe Life Field in Arlington, Texas. After the fights, a Metallica concert. So I can get into that. I saw Metallica live 10 years ago. So I'm 27 now. I was 17, went to see Metallica. Second best concert I ever went to see. John, what's the first one? Rush. Rush was the best concert I ever went to. And the Trailer Park Boys came out on stage. But Frank Mir, Kubrat Pulev, 9 rounds. Have you looked the card up yet? Have I given you enough time?
I'm looking
okay.
at it.
Alexander Flores fighting Matt Mitrione in the co-main event. Keep your mouth guard in, Matt. Not excited about that fight. Michael Seals is going to fight Mike Perry in a special fight at 175. No interest in that. Brian Vera fighting Derek Campos. I like Derek Campos. You like Derek Campos. Former longtime Bellator fighter, Derek Campos. Always around the top. Albert Tumanov, who's called out everyone and their brother over on the internet. A winning fighter with the UFC. He's fought a who's who. John, he's fought Leon Edwards, Albert Tumanov. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on that one. Fighting Scott Sigmund. Jacob Thrall fighting Harry Gigliotti. John, are you excited about this card?
I'm not. And there's some of these cards where I'm like, you know what? I get that it's a circus, but I'll buy the popcorn and look and watch the clowns. But this one, it's too much.
Gunnar Nelson, Leon Edwards has wins over Lorenz Larkin, Alan Joban, Nico Masuke, Matt Dwyer, Anthony Lapsley, and a loss to Ildemar Alcantara in the debut. He's won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 fights with ACB, ACA, and now he's fighting Triller Triad Combat. That is Albert Tumanov.
Do you think that when the 30 for 30 is done, or whatever they call it, you know, the Hulu documentary, the Netflix doc, whatever it is done on Triller, that there will be like some shady dealings here? Or do you think that they're just like, they're treating this as like a one-off each time, and they're like, okay, these are the fighters we got, this is how much money we expect to get in, this is why we can pay Frank Mir? Or do you think they're like over their skis?
No, I mean, look, I thought BKFC was going to be done after they had Artem Lobov, Pauly Malignaggi, and they're still kicking. So I think it's just they are trying to push the envelope every time. It's interesting. It's neat. They're in a little bit of trouble on that Triller Triad thing, like the Triad Triangle Ring. I saw that. BYB, not happy about it. So we talked about that in our last show. We'll see how that one plays out. But yeah, as far as this card's concerned, I'm not interested at all, other than the conversation we've had so far.
Yeah, sometimes I get concerned when I hear promotions, fighters coming out saying this is the most I've ever been paid, because it makes me think that the promotion that's paying them isn't self-aware enough to understand that we could give Frank Mir for a lot less than we're paying. Like, if you're paying him the most he's ever been paid, he's not the best he's ever been. So why is he commanding top dollar, or why do you need him so desperately that follow me? Like,
no, here's the question that I have. And I really do want a response out of this. Let's look at the other fights that Triller's had, right? Vitor Belfort fought Evander Holyfield. Who gets excited about that? Guys your age. I mean, no offense, I'm a goateed man, but guys your age, right? Seriously, guys your age. I'm not. That's fine. Yeah, but what demo were they going after when they had Ben Askren fighting friggin' Jake Paul, or when they had, like, see where I'm going with this? Like,
they're going Paul after both demos. They're going after
you. You can't do that. Does the UFC do that? Because they can. Like, MMA, they can do that. Boxing, they can kind of do that. This, what, like, I thought Triller was supposed to be some type of social media app that I've never heard of before. What guy your age is going on this Triller app that I've never seen in my life that I don't even know enough to talk about?
Yeah, I get that. I think for me, what it, listen, the UFC certainly puts old, potentially washed up fighters against young lions. They just don't, it's not as obvious, right? It's understood that the guys that fight in Triller are washed up to some extent, but it's kind of like a, not a handicap match, but it's like the fights are with a caveat, right? It's like saying, could you beat Michael Jordan? No. But could you beat a 60-year-old Michael Jordan if you're the best N1 basketball player? Yeah, now you can promote that because this guy's not quite NBA level and this guy's old. So I think that's what they're trying to do is they're trying to say, yeah, this guy's a celebrity who's taking boxing kind of seriously and this other guy's washed up. So now it makes for a good fight. So I, you know, at their best, it doesn't make for a good fight, but now maybe it does. So I'm with you. I do think, yeah, it's weird marketing to market to a demographic that doesn't understand your brand, but, you know, it's working.
Yeah, you know what? Let's get these guys to pay for it on Fight TV, something they probably never heard of before. Like, Fight's been around, and I have a subscription. I have Fight TV Plus. But, like, who is following Frank Mir and his opponent, whose name that I have to look up, Kubrat Pulev, who's fought Joshua and Klitschko? Like, see, I don't understand. Maybe I'd buy this to watch the Metallica.
Yeah.
Like, I do like Metallica a lot.
I think that sometimes with these Triller cards, it's like the old fishing thing. If you cast enough lines, something's bound to bite. I think they're just casting so many lines and throwing so many nets out that when you pull them all in, you're like, we got six crabs. Well, you threw out 30 nets and you got six crabs. It's not like you threw out three nets. You threw out 30. Anyway, we move on to start the conversation. Craig, Sean O'Malley's been calling out Adrian Yanez. Here's the thing. We talked earlier about what Chimaev is doing. Is O'Malley intentionally avoiding big game and not going big game hunting the most brilliant strategy ever in MMA? Because I know guys like you are excited about him fighting Adrian Yanez, and they know like how legit the guy is. But is it the whole point of this? To fight the biggest name that's the worst fighter? I mean, isn't that why you do this? Isn't that what he was trying to do with Chito Vera? You fight a big guy who you think you can beat?
Is this thing on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you looked at Sean O'Malley's Tapology page, though? Because he's got a fight at UFC 269 against Halion Paiva. Why are you talking about Adrian Yanez, man? Get his name out your mouth. You got to fight against Halion Paiva. The last time Sean O'Malley decided to do something like this, and listen, he does it pretty much every fight, but remember when he fought Chito Vera? And he kind of talked a big game, and then he lost to Chito Vera. And listen, did the leg give out? Maybe it did, but he still lost the fight. Then he beats Almeida, and he looked really good in that fight. And then he beat Chris Moutinho, who was 9-4 at the time. And it was too much too soon for Chris on short notice because it was originally supposed to be Luis Smolka. So for me, if Sean O'Malley's talking about, you know, potential fight against Adrian Yanez, I'm excited about that. It's crazy hair versus Dr. Pepper. It's Texas versus Arizona at this point, I guess. Like, you guys could hang out. Have you thought about that?
I have. That's all I think about.
Sean O'Malley, Tim Welch, John Franklin. Where are you going to eat and what are you ordering?
Oh man, where are those guys? Those guys are probably going to go to some like vegetarian place, and I'm probably going to have to get something with a lot of black beans in it to make me feel like I'm eating meat. So
I figured you'd say like Chipotle, which is close.
We're going to go to the Keg.
Hey, the Keg.
You know what's funny? Did a little research because I took my son. We went to Desert Ridge, which is a shopping area, 15 minutes from here. That's where the Keg is. So whenever Craig Allen decides to come to Phoenix, there's a Keg that's close. But you don't like the Keg, which is the mind-blowing thing of you bringing it up in our podcast, which is you reference it as a place that you go, that people go, not you, but that, you know, one goes to eat well, and yet you don't like it.
People go there, but listen, if people want recommendations about Fredericton, and my wife's going to laugh in the room over, and if anybody's listening to this, it's ever been Brubaker's and Isaac's Way. I love the local spots, John Franklin. You got to go to the nice local spots. They might cost a little bit more. It might be similar food to the Keg, but it's going to be better. And you know, they cooked it. You know, it's not like frozen to your plate.
And we move on to Finish Strong. Craig, what do you got in Finish Strong?
Dan Hooker's moving down to 145. What are you feeling of? Like, do you like that?
I just think that there's just too many kill. All due respect to Dan Hooker, he's a stud. There's just too many killers at 55. I mean, not that there aren't at 45, but there are some absolute all-time monsters at 55. You know what might be a fun featured segment next week? We go through each – I think we've done this before, but it'd be fun to update it. We go through each division to see how many Hall of Famers they have in it. I bet lightweight has the most. And guys that you can make a Hall of Fame case for. So, yeah, he might have a little bit more luck at 45. My finish strong is and this could be a much longer segment if we draw this out, but let's just do heavyweight. Stipe Miocic said this week that he should have been involved either in the interim fight or the this or that. He wants Jones. He wants Ngannou. Do you think the UFC is wasting Stipe Miocic's prime? Do you think Stipe is wasting his prime? What do you think? Do you think his legacy is already set and he's already a Hall of Famer, so everything now is gravy and he's just trying to like set up his retirement? Where do you think Stipe Miocic is at in his career? Because he goes away for a while and we kind of forget about him. Then he comes back, looks great, and we're kind of reminded of his greatness.
He wins and he wins and he wins, and then he's the greatest heavyweight of all time. And then he loses and he wins and he's the greatest, and then eventually he beats DC again and he's the greatest. And then he loses to Francis. He's not so great anymore. And listen, again, the minor league baseball, look at that bobblehead that I have of Stipe Miocic that sits in the office, dictates to me that, listen, if a minor league baseball team can get up for this guy, then the UFC should too. And listen, is he still in his prime? He's not a young man, John. Like, he's not a young guy. And heavyweights don't need to be, but Stipe definitely isn't. So it's unfortunate that we haven't got to see him fight more often. What, the Francis fight was early this year, correct? So it has been a while, but he is normally a year between fights or so. So hopefully they can get him booked in a big-time marquee fight, but I'm sure he's demanding top dollar, wants to be respected as the greatest heavyweight of all time. And right now he's in a GSP category of maybe he is the greatest of all time, but they're probably not going to market him like that anymore.
Yeah, he's in a weird spot. A side note before I go off on this, I want to say one thing that I think could be your calling card. And if anybody's listened to the podcast this long and they decide to steal this from you and take it as their own legacy, so be it. You should be the guy. We live in this NFT world. You know what I think would be even cooler than NFTs? If you just had odd memorabilia that was so specific to just you that it made it rare. An example, if you had a hockey puck signed by John Jones, like, what would be the point of having a hockey puck signed by John Jones except that you're the only person in the world that would have a hockey puck signed by John Jones?
Did you watch that TikTok?
No, what is what?
You didn't? Oh, second channel, 15-minute card breaks, the Adesanya autograph. Seriously. Yeah, you know, I could do stuff like that. But that's the thing. Like, if a person ever came over here, they got to see some of the stuff. And, like, you know what else I have here? Like, people are really going to like this. This is show and tell. It's the end of the show. Oh, Larry Walker McFarlane? Like, I've got a lot of neat stuff. But, yeah, you're right. If I had, like, a baseball bat signed by Gorilla Monsoon, or if I had, like, a soccer ball signed by Wayne Gretzky, yeah, I catch you, Jeff.
Like, if that was your thing, like, you would go – if you went to signings – and you brought with you the oddest thing. Like, you show up to a Gretzky signing, you're like, he signed a soccer ball? And he's like, sure. Why not? That would be the best. Cause if you put on eBay, it'd be the only Wayne Gretzky signed soccer ball, I guarantee you, there was
top
on eBay.
One of one. Yeah, tap dance shoes signed by Matt Leiner.
See? Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FNP. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Let's get into it. I got nothing.
Peace!